Mic down. Yeah.
Hi everyone, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Tracy, and today I'm going to share a bit of our journey with our wee Demi. So our journey started back in August 2019 when our 16-week-old Demi was diagnosed with bilateral retinoblastoma. To put simply, cancer of the eyes. My husband Luke had read a Stuff article about 6 months earlier about a white eye reflex as opposed to a red when taking photos with a flash on. He had noticed this white eye with Demi, so we retained a referral to Bridgewater, where the specialist told us on the spot that she would lose her eye and to go home and prepare for Starship. A few days later, we set off for Starship for an unknown period of time. It was pretty hard to leave Libby. She had just adjusted to having a new sister in her life, and now we were off for who knows how long. The eye exam at Green Lane confirmed that she had it in both eyes. Our hearts sank when they said both eyes. The tumour in her left eye was so big that the retina was fully detached, that they believed she'd never had vision in that eye. Her right eye had 6 little tumours that were treated with laser on the spot. The decision was made to remove her eye as soon as possible and just take the risk out of her body. The eye removal took place a few weeks later. Her eye was removed and replaced with a plastic ball that has the muscles and nerves attached to it, so it still moves. The eye was sent to Christchurch for testing, and it was pretty crazy. The lab could tell who the surgeon was by the way the muscles had been cut. They run millions of tests over these eyes, and the testing came back and confirmed 2 things. The first, that the mutation was not inherited from us, but that also means that Demi has a 50% chance of passing it on to her kids, a bridge will cross later in life. The second was that the cancer had begun to travel down the optic nerve, so we'd need to start chemotherapy. We had a Hickman line inserted and started chemotherapy at the peak of the measles outbreak in New Zealand. So masks and isolating were a thing for us way before COVID. The wards were in full lockdown. Demi was a few weeks short of being able to get her vaccine, which was pretty daunting because immunocompromised children have a 50% fatality rate with measles. I think I went into it a little naive around what Demi's schedule would look like, and we left with a monthly calendar detailing chemotherapy, weekend antibiotics, 7 days of injections, weekly bloods, dressing changes, clinic visits and anti-nausea medication, along with visits from the blind and low vision and child cancer. The weeks filled up very quickly. Our oncologist was a real straight shooter, and which is something I now love about her. One of our really early appointments, she stopped me in my tracks and said, "Tracy, this is medicine, not accounting. The path can change at any time and you need to prepare yourself for that." We learnt what it was like to be under a shared care model. We had the Green Lane ophthalmologist, the eye surgeon, the prosthetic specialist, the Starship team and the Waikato team. I have no doubt that everyone had Demi's best interest in mind. However, at times, everyone was acting as specialists in their own field and missing the team's lens. After her first dose of chemotherapy, the prosthetic specialist was pushing for a clear conformer to be put in to stimulate the socket growth. The oncologist was saying no foreign objects are allowed in her body because of the risk of the socket getting infected. As parents new to the medical world, we had no idea what was right or who was the controlling decision maker. I quickly learned that Demi didn't have a voice, so it was my job to be her voice. I also learned that there were organisations like True Colours who could step in and be an advocate for us if needed. We continued chemotherapy for 6 months, travelling to Starship for a week a month, and no amount of resilience training could prepare you to sign papers to cure your child's cancer today, but potentially cause cancer in 20 years' time. Watching a nurse walk in, all gowned and masked up, with a drum labelled toxic and connecting it to your child is an image forever etched in my mind. All in all, chemo went pretty smoothly. We tried to keep as much normality in our life as we could, like a holiday at the beach, which We look back now and it's really like one of those Instagram versus reality memes. It was absolutely terrible. Demi didn't even go down the beach for the first 2 years because we couldn't get sand in the socket, so we'd kind of just walk along the front of the beach. We got a dressing change done by a local nurse down there who hadn't worked on a child in years, and basically me with my 3 months extensive training had to coach her through that the site was now unsterile and that she needed to start again. Demi was also waking up to 7 times in the night while we were sleeping in a caravan, and which we later discovered was from a drug overdose, which made her muscles ache. There's little you can do in terms of pain relief when you have Hickman line in, because if you give PAMO, you may be masking another infection. It's fair to say that the coffee machine I purchased soon after her diagnosis became my new best friend. I've never really been great at asking for help, but this was a time in our life where we didn't really have a choice. We were so overwhelmed with the love and humanity from people around us, to friends turning up with bags of food, my workplace arriving with chili bins full of food after every chemo, complete strangers who reached out to us upon hearing our stories, and to my mum who was our absolute rock. I began counselling at True Colours and connected with Cynthia instantly. She made sense of what I was thinking and feeling, and she also had a medical background, which was extremely helpful. We also began counselling for Libby, as cancer impacts the whole family. We were explained there didn't have to be anything wrong to have an appointment, but to establish a relationship, so if anything did happen, she already felt comfortable in that space. I remember one car ride to True Colours. I'm not even sure if Demi was old enough to understand, but Libby spoke up and said to Demi, "Now this is my special appointment today, not yours." It helped me see the world through her eyes, even though we were taking Demi off to hospital for something not very nice. In Libby's eyes, we were having one-on-one time with Demi. We ended chemotherapy in February 2020, right before COVID hit. In fact, Demi got her first prosthetic eye the day before lockdown. The specialist and I went back and forth over what to do and what was right, as because you weren't really supposed to be travelling, but we didn't know how long COVID was going to go on for. The eyes are hand-painted to colour match. They're like a thick contact lens that sits over the ball. It's fair to say that Demi wasn't a huge fan of the prosthetic maker and proceeded to fall asleep in my arms the entire appointment. That's not ideal when he's trying to do a colour match on her eyes. It was such a special moment when she got her eye after 8 months of just having the white ball in there. You were no longer reminded of her journey every time you looked at her. To be honest, the first lockdown was an absolute blessing for our family. I was still on maternity leave and Luke's work was still navigating the COVID world. And so for us, it gave us a chance just to slow down and reconnect as a family. We celebrated Demi's first birthday with a FaceTime party. Of course, our visits to Starship still continued regardless of what level we were in. Demi had been booked in to get her Hickman line removed, how everything got cancelled due to COVID. Demi had other plans. The first week of lockdown, the district nurse came to take her bloods and flush her line, and it burst, resulting in an ambulance trip to Waikato. Due to restricted staff, they removed her line on the ward with some midazolam up her nose and some local on the site, with baby sharks blaring over the radio to distract her. Still can't quite listen to that song. By June, life had resumed to some sort of new normal. Demi had begun with a private carer, and I had started back at work on reduced hours. The mundane normality of life was bliss. Demi's monthly eye exams continued under general anaesthetic, with a few spots popping up from time to time, but they were either treated with laser or chirotherapy. In late August, a new spot popped up right on the edge of her eyes. It was really hard to get to, and they couldn't guarantee they were getting the whole thing. And of course, by this stage with COVID, it was all one parent appointments. So in September 2020, I went along to an eye exam, and they'd moved them to 2 weekly at this stage because they didn't have to wait to see the impacts of chemo. They told me the tumour had changed texture and it was beginning to split in her eye. This meant two things. One, there was a chance if it seeded into her eye in the wrong spot, she could end up blind. Or two, was that we needed to restart chemo ASAP. We would do traditional chemo for 1 month, and if we didn't get the result we wanted, we would inject chemo into her eyes. and at this stage this hadn't been done on any children in New Zealand. I felt absolutely blindsided. The oncologist phoned, and thankfully Demi was bigger, we could have a port this time instead of a Hickman line. This was really welcome news, especially for our babysitters, because nobody was a fan of the Hickman line. I think second time round it hit me pretty hard emotionally. I'm a pretty optimistic person, but some weeks it was just a lot. I was so convinced after the first 6 months that we were done, but Luke, on the other hand, was a lot more cautious and often reminded me not to get ahead of myself. I felt like I'd been quite an open book throughout our journey with friends and family, but it wasn't until I went to True Colours and she said to me that sometimes in these situations we hold quite a bit of stuff to ourselves in fear of what people may think of us if we say what we're really thinking and feeling. I hadn't sort of realised how much I had been carrying around with me. The next lot of chemo was a lot more challenging. Libby was due to start school, so we put those plans on hold for a bit. I was working, and I needed to for my sanity. Demi was older and moving around a lot more, and so a lot more prone to picking up bugs and infections. The first time round, I was still feeding her, so it was a lot more easy to distract her during chemo as well. We were so lucky, though, that both of us parents could be there for every dose of chemo. She responded really well to the chemo, and we only needed 4 doses out of the 6, and we finished our last chemo on the 23rd of December 2020. I just sent a group message to say that we were done when Demi had an allergic reaction to one of the drugs. A pretty terrifying experience. I remember arriving at my mum's house on Christmas Eve and just bursting into tears. I was feeling pretty done at that point. We started Libby at school a few weeks later in November, and it was actually such a silver lining that I was at home and able to pick her up and drop her off every day and integrate her into school. There was a few challenges from time to time, like when I'd promised Libby I'd pick her up and Demi got a fever and we ended up in hospital, and she got a bit of a surprise when Dad or Nana was there to pick her up. 2022 was a much smoother year for us, despite numerous COVID tests. I don't think there's probably a person in the room who's done more COVID tests than Demi. Border paperwork and continuing monitoring, Demi's eyes stayed relatively settled. In August, it had been a whole year since she'd had any activity in her eyes. With her cancer, there's a risk of new tumours turning up in her eyes until the eye finished maturing at about age 5 or 6. Every appointment that we have is another step closer. I recently heard someone describe her cancer like popcorn. It can just pop at any time. Due to COVID, her port had to stay in for 17 months longer than needed. This meant every time she got a temperature, we ended up in hospital for 2 nights. So we would end up in there in the peak of RSV and COVID, even though we were dealing with the temperature. Thankfully, in June this year, we managed to have it removed. So as of now, Demi's been under general anaesthetic around 47 times. She's on quarterly eye exams and MRIs and has around 369 beads of courage. She's funny, strong-willed, and a determined wee girl who lights up every room she walks into. She's even pranked the odd relief teacher by taking her prosthetic eye out. Thankfully, there's been no impact to the vision in her right eye, despite the 9 wee tumours she's now had in that eye, and we're on to our 4th prosthetic. She keeps up with other children and hasn't let having one eye hold her back. Thanks so much for letting us share.
You may have a future in public speaking, Tracy. We'll talk to you later. I'd like to lead into communion now, if a couple of people could bring the table up for us.
Thanks so much, Tracy and Luke. Thank you for the team that led us in those songs. Oh, good morning. Am I on? Good. Okay. In the last 2 weeks, 4 things have happened which are like beacon lights that lined up, which led me into a harbour, which is what I'm talking about this morning. So that's why I said last week, you need to be here, because these alignments are pretty important. They are to me. hope they will be to you too. Four things. One is what Christine said to me recently concerning Cynthia Ward, who Tracy mentioned. We've known her for over 20 years. A film that I saw, an article I read, and an interview I heard. But we are talking about one another. And we're going to start there with those scriptures that we have before us. From Galatians, and I'm getting them up. Yep, you can read those. Which has been referred to this morning in more than one way. And so important. Then we have Ephesians. Be patient. We have Ephesians, be kind and compassionate. All of these things have been part of Tracy's story, and are hopefully along the way yours. And Colossians 3, bear with one another and forgive one another. It's probably the hardest one of all. Philip wrote in Pastor Salt this week that this talk was going to be about trials and hardships. And it is, but it isn't. It's encompassing some of that, but it goes beyond that and yet is within it. And that sounds like double Dutch, and that's probably what it is. So the question of the what if is, what if we could be better good neighbours? Now, I was going to read Luke 10, which is the story of the Good Samaritan and the good neighbour story. I'm not going to. I have it open here. I would be very surprised if none of you had, if any of you here had ever heard of it. And so I think it's quite familiar, of the guy that was beaten up and robbed, lay by the side of the road, and a priest and a Levite went by, saw him and didn't do anything about it, and the Samaritan did. So I want to take that theme, which is part of the one another, and I want to lead you into some reflections, which probably would dig a deeper hole for me than for you. Anyway, we'll see how we go. So the first thing that happened to me was just the other day, Christine said, you remember Cynthia Ward's mantra? Which of course I didn't, because anything over a week ago, I don't remember. She said, learn to listen to the voice of the child. And it was that, her great concern, that she left hospice and started a whole new program to put the child at the focus in the context of the family, which Tracy alluded to. Now, I asked the questions of myself, and I ask them of you. Are people invisible? If only I could see them. And why don't they show themselves? Why don't they stand out? Why don't they put their hand up and say, here I am, like the guy that was robbed on the road to Jericho? And it seems this is an issue, because it certainly wouldn't be exclusive to that particular story. A couple of weeks ago, in the second incident I referred to, I met a man named Mr. Rogers. Now, I didn't actually meet him, but I met him in a movie called A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Has anyone seen it? It's recommended watching. And then I met him in a magazine article which followed on from his work, this Mr. Rogers, and the article was called Can You Say Hero? And a quote from this article, and it says, in part, it's a long article in the Esquire magazine years ago. So once upon a time, Fred Rogers took off his jacket, put on a sweater his mother had made him, a cardigan with the zipper. Then he took off his shoes and put on a pair of navy blue canvas boating sneakers on TV. And I thought to myself as I read that, that was deliberately inviting. I think it meant, okay, you audience out there in the millions, let's get comfortable with one another, right? You're in my home, which the TV setting was set out to be. We've all the time in the world to get to know one another. And he did that for 38 years. Now, Sesame Street was pretty popular, but it was more like in school. And the Muppets was probably more popular, but that was technologically and professionally perfect. I don't think anyone could ever do what those two series did. But Mr. Rogers was completely different. He became an American icon, even when he visited a zoo in San Francisco or San Diego Zoo. There's a gorilla there called Coco, a very famous gorilla. He was taught sign language and he watched television. So Mr. Rogers was doing the program down there and he went and sat with Coco. And they all sat together. And you wouldn't believe what Coco did. He did what Fred Rogers had done for years. He took Fred's shoes off because he'd seen him do it on television to put on the new, on the blue sneakers. This was an extraordinary man in every shape and form. He had so many Emmy Awards for daytime television that they just eventually gave him a lifetime Emmy. The thing about this that impressed me that fits in with all of this up here is that, come on, you might have to move that on for me. Right, thank you. Is that he listened to people. And like Cynthia, he listened to children. Now, he had puppets, but there were nothing like the Muppet puppets. They were just ordinary puppets he sort of had since he was childhood. And he had these different voices. He did all the puppetry and he did all the voices. There's only about four or five puppets. But the thing that that stood out with Mr. Rogers was that he had children with him on the set. And he talked with them. And he listened to them. And he healed them. And he explored with them. And he became their friends. Gandhi said once, in a gentle way, you can shake the world. So I've got these thoughts milling around, which I hope you will understand. In the front of the church directory, Philip wrote these words, "Everyone here is handmade to display God's glory. Every page overflows with unique creations who reveal something special about God's character. Admittedly, it's a bit hard to see this truth just from looking at people, or looking at pages, rather. You can't really tell much about a person or their character from a photo. So I suggest that we go deeper. And it might take some dying to self to do that. From the Good Samaritan story and from these observations and from these four lights that have sort of guided me in this particular talk, I want to put to you two or three things that you can go away with this morning. Firstly, looking is not necessarily seeing. The Levite and the priest looked at this broken man on the side of the road, but didn't see him. Are people invisible? Why don't they put their hand up and say, "Here I am"? According to Bennett Sims, who wrote a book called Leadership, he referred to a tribe in northern Natal in South Africa. And the most common greeting translated into English is, "I see you." And the reply would be, "I am here." And that was the second thing that struck me. Or second or third, I've forgotten now. Thought, that is so profound. And as he explains, as Sims explains, until they see me, I do not exist. When you do see me, you bring me into existence. Do you see people in the church? Do you see the neighbours in your street, the people in your work? Do you really see them? Or are you waiting for them to put their hand up? Are you waiting for them to say, "Hey, I'm here"? When you really see me, you bring me into existence, folks. And when I see you, I do the same. And I have dignity and have honor in your sight. This is more than a glance, obviously. This is not a hurried welcome at the door. It's not a shake of the hand. It's not saying, "How are you this morning?" It's not even a smile across the room. It's not even an invitation to lunch. It's not an invitation to coffee. It's not an invitation to anything. But this, to really be seen, is an invitation to a new depth of understanding. This is good neighbor insight. This is Mr. Rogers' insight. He would frustrate his television crew time and time again because he refused to be hurried. He refused to follow scripts. If he saw a need, he stopped. He looked. He brought the child into existence. One time, a family brought a child in who was in real difficulties. And he had this sword, this plastic sword. And he was waving it around. Fred couldn't get near him. He was waving it everywhere, sort of like fighting the enemy. And so Fred just waited. Cameras kept whirring or whatever they did. And then when the kid settled down a bit, he leaned into him and spoke in his ear. And in recounting this later on to this particular person that wrote the article, the guy said, "What did you say?" He said, "I said to the boy, I think you're really strong inside." The boy just settled down. That is bringing someone into existence. That is seeing someone. But also, hearing is not necessarily listening. I think this is where I dig myself into a deep pit. People are rarely listened to in a transformative way. We are too busy or preoccupied. Generally, I can be more interested in telling you my stories than listening, truly listening to yours. In our home group last year, I noticed the best person in the group, in terms of what I'm saying this morning, not in terms of overall character or anything like that, you get the point, was John Buchanan, who said almost nothing. But when he said something, boy, it was worth it. While some people like me would rave on with all sorts of wonderful stuff. And here this comes to the next light in my journey to the harbour. I was listening to Kim Hill yesterday doing an interview with a guy who was a singer. And the singer said, "I had real trouble with my throat. My throat just destroyed itself and got nodules all over the voice box." And the only answer to that, apparently, is you're not allowed to use your voice box for weeks on end. You had to be entirely silent, which he did, and he got his voice back. And this is the interesting thing of all. She said, "I was amazed how people really shared with me because I couldn't speak back." So are we full of ourselves, so full of ourselves that and our importance that we literally have no room for anybody else in our listening? In listening, we pick up not only information but emotions and vibes and sometimes a deeper agenda. Don't be worried and upset, Jesus said. How did he know that? Did they tell him? I don't think so. I think he was a supreme listener, as he is in most things, perhaps all things. We experimented a little bit with this in the A-team years ago, and it worked to an extent, but it's hard. It's hard to let the other person take control of the conversation, because we want to interrupt. We have our agendas, we have our stories, we have our opinions, we have our doctrines, and we never see the person or listen to the person in front of us. We know that's wrong. We don't, it's not never, we often don't. And then finally, interest is not as powerful as astonishment. This might seem a bit strange. To me, interest is shallow. I can be interested in you, but I think it doesn't go far enough. Now, you can see how I'm preaching to myself as much as sharing with you. I can be interested in all sorts of things, but I don't have to go deep with them. We can be experts, so-called experts, at a whole range of things and really don't know what we're doing. But it takes astonishment to take us deeper. But astonishment can come from interest, obviously. So to really see and hear, we can enter a new world, an amazing world of the other. People may be astonished that you care. You see, people come and go in and out this church, down your street, around you, in your business. But if you ask them, if someone asks them, does anyone care about you here? They probably would look a bit bewildered. If you ask them, do you think anyone is astonished at you? Would be a question I think would have come from Mars. But we are astonishing. We are unique. We are God's image. We've got to learn a little bit from Mr. Rogers. From Mr. Jesus and the Good Samaritan. I'm sure that the guy broken on the road on the way to Jericho, when he came to, would have been astonished that someone had cared for him. I am sure also, if I might take the liberty, and they're not here this morning, to say Susie, if she could explain it, would be astonished at the love and care that Jeff and Jill gave her instead of leaving her as a broken little baby with parents that had no idea. And I'm sure, if I can take the liberty again to say that Luke and Tracy are astonished at the True Colours experience, where they would have seen what I'm talking about this morning. So, in conclusion, once upon a time, a man named Fred Rogers decided that he wanted to live in heaven. Heaven is the place where good people go when they die. But this man, Fred Rogers, didn't want to go to heaven. He wanted to live in heaven here, now, in this world. And so one day when he was talking about all the people he had loved in his life, he looked at me, this is the correspondent, and said, "The connections we make in the course of a life, maybe that's what heaven is, Tom. We make so many connections here on earth. Look at us. I've just met you, but I'm investing in you, who you are, who you will be, and I can't help it." May God give us many Fred Rogers in your skin. Amen. Alex wants to share a few thoughts about their retreat or their whatever it was, their advance, their weekend away.